Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. In 2015, as many of you remember, U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Preet Bharara, secured guilty verdicts against two of the most powerful men in New York State, Sheldon Silver, the Speaker of the State Assembly, and Dean Skelos, the Long Island Republican who led the state Senate. As the dual corruption convictions came down, there was hope at long last that public outrage could motivate lawmakers to finally clean up Albany at the legislative level. But yesterday, a federal appeals court overturned the conviction of Sheldon Silver, and with that, perhaps the notion of effective ethics enforcement itself. The verdict came on the basis of a recent Supreme Court decision that narrowed the definition of what type of official behavior can be considered corrupt. So here to talk us through the case and what it means for the future of corruption charges coming out of Albany are Politico New York's Albany Bureau Chief, Jimmy Vielkind, and New York State Senator Todd Kominsky, who holds the seat formerly held by Dean Skelos on Long Island. Kominsky has been a corruption prosecutor himself. Welcome back, both of you. Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning, Brian.
So, Jimmy, the appeal rested on a recent Supreme Court decision which overturned the graft conviction of Bob McDonnell, the one-time governor of Virginia. That decision narrowed the scope of public corruption, as I said before, making it harder to define by a prosecutor what it means for a politician to partake in an illegal quid pro quo. What can you tell us about the standard that the Supreme Court set?
Well, it's actually the standard and as it was instructed to the jury. So what jurors in Sheldon Silver's case heard was that a official act, in this case the quo in the quid pro quo bribery scheme, was, quote, a formal exercise of government power. That's what the definition should be. The jurors were told that this is, quote, any action taken or to be taken under color of official authority, end quote. So if you're an elected official, you stand at an official podium and you say you should listen to the Brian Lehrer Show, you should buy my book, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's a broad definition of an official act. The Supreme Court ruled that with the case of Governor McDonnell and his wife, what they were essentially doing was using their bully pulpit to make the case to purchase, I believe it was a pharmaceutical or a dietary supplement. And in exchange for that, they received gifts, including a Rolex watch from the developer of that supplement. So the Supreme Court ruled that actually an official act is a decision or action on a, quote, question, matter, cause, suit, proceeding, or controversy involving, quote, a formal exercise of governmental power. So if you're just advocating for something publicly, not necessarily an official action. If you're taking a vote on something, that's an official action. If you're directing money to somewhere, that's an official action. If you're helping out the son or daughter of a campaign donor or someone who's paying you, not necessarily an official governmental action.
So, Senator Kominsky, in this case, I think what they found was that Sheldon Silver did perform an official action on behalf of this doctor at Columbia University who referred Silver's law firm to a lot of business, and Silver got a lot of money as a result of that, but that he did take official action getting funding for this doctor's institute, I guess, at Columbia. So what do you think about this overturning, and do you think that upon conviction, upon retrial, they would still come to conviction based on what I just said?
Yes. So basically, the heart of this is what the jury was told, and the court specifically said there are acts that fall under the Supreme Court's definition of official. We just don't know what the jury relied on. Did they rely on unofficial acts or official acts? And that should be clarified. You know, in terms of retrying a case, retrying cases are, you know, an exhaustive process for prosecutors. Somebody once described it for me as, you know, go putting on a sandy, wet bathing suit at the end of a day. You know, you could imagine all the time you take going through a case, and then you gotta do it again. But this is not a case that's 20 years old. There isn't physical evidence that has spoiled. There likely won't be witnesses whose memories will have failed or will have passed away in the meantime. So in terms of difficulties as far as retrying cases goes, they should be able to put the exact same thing back together. And I'm sure the Southern District feels that although this was an unfortunate setback for them, that they have the evidence they need in order to bring this case again. And I think they expect to get the same result again.
For you, as not only a state senator, but a former anti-corruption prosecutor, tell me if you think I'm reading the news coverage of this right, that what the appeals court objected to was just that the judge's instructions were too broad, that they were based on the pre-Supreme Court ruling standard, that even the kind of casual favor that Jimmy was describing before, that Governor McDonnell in Virginia did for the people he did business with, that even that kind of casual favor could be seen as corruption by the jury. He shouldn't have instructed them in that way, the judge instructing the jury, but that when you look closely at this case, Sheldon Silver's actions meet the stricter definition of corruption that the Supreme Court actually laid down. So what the appeals court did yesterday was really throw this out on a technicality of the judge using improper language to the jury, not the facts of the case.
I think that's exactly right, but I do think it reveals a much larger gap in our state's ability to criminalize actions that everyday people know are wrong. In other words, if it is true that only very official conducts that are a quid pro quo, one exchange for another, are going to be what the feds can go after now, then maybe we can't just rely on federal prosecutors using federal statutes to go after state officials. And federal prosecutors, you know, like I used to do in the Eastern District and Mr. Barrara had done very well in the Southern District, they are really the last and only line of corruption busting that exists in New York State. And if their abilities have been curtailed, and now we've seen Senator Bruno's case overturned, another Senator Libous's case overturned, now Speaker Silver's case overturned, I think New York needs to start stepping up on its own. We don't empower our local prosecutors to bring these cases. Their powers are very weak. Our laws are very lax. New York has a very strict bribery statute that has to have a meeting of the minds between the giver and the receiver. So I could leave a bag of cash on someone's door, and if we never have a conversation about it or there's no way to prove one for the other to a jury of 12 people, it's not a felony offense, really. And so this really reveals some of the shortcomings that we have in policing our elected officials, and I think it leaves a wide open gap that Congress could certainly solve if it wants to, but the state can as well. So, and in light of Washington's lack of ability to get much done lately, I think it's incumbent upon us to do it.
So, Jimmy Vielkind, for you as an Albany-based political reporter, you hear what Senator Kaminsky is saying. If federal law, the way it stands, is too weak with respect to prosecuting what in real life amounts to corruption, even if it doesn't under the law, do you think the politics of Albany will allow us to set a new law for our state that's more strict than the federal standard?
I think perhaps, but it's actually, I see it as sort of a secondary level question. So what Senator Kaminsky is describing is giving a tougher tool to the police, be they state prosecutors, local prosecutors, or federal prosecutors. And I do think, and many of the people I spoke with over the course of the last 24 hours have said that this ruling shows quite clearly that federal prosecutors' tools are getting weaker. That's one idea. The other idea, which you hear from good government advocates and from some state legislators themselves, is that you need to change the system to essentially make the gray areas, make the lines where corruption can happen go away. So this idea of outside income for state legislators, something that you and I have discussed, Brian, it's something that was debated in the state legislature, not this year, but in previous years, in 2015 and 2016, in the wake of the indictments and convictions of Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos. And the thinking there is, if you're prophylactic in the way you structure your government, if you say a state lawmaker can only make X dollars, can only make 15% of their government salary from outside employment, which, by the way, is the model that we have for the United States Congress, that you'll eliminate these conflicts of interest, or you'll at least make them quite clear. If we mandate more transparency about those things, which state lawmakers have done and did do in 2015, we'll make it easier for people to spot these conflicts. Because as you pointed out, and as Senator Kaminsky pointed out, it's hard to prove these cases. Here's an example. If you were a state legislator employed by Company X, and you shilled for Company X, you held press conferences about the glories of Company X, if you talked about how the state should be giving money to Company X to support its new plant, but then when a vote on that money for Company X came up and you abstained, have you committed an official act, and therefore have you engaged in a quid pro quo scheme for Company X, which is paying you all along? I think under the existing law, there could be a real question on that, and certainly a smart defense lawyer, and Sheldon Silver has them, would exploit the specific language of the law. So in addition to the idea of changing the law and make it easier to prove the case, many people are saying, well, why should we be having these conversations? Why should lawmaker A even be allowed to work for Company X in the first place?
Senator, do you think if you were to propose a bill in Albany today, and I think you may have proposed bills in the past, to tighten ethics requirements in some of the ways that Jimmy was just laying out, that it would have a snowball's chance in Florida of passing?
I don't think it would, which is sad to say, but true. And in fact, I think that yesterday's decision has an even more corrosive impact. So the old guard style of Albany thinking is that there are overzealous prosecutors who want to make a name for themselves, who are out there bringing cases against bad apples, but also some good people. And the bad apples are going to do what the bad apples are going to do, and there's nothing we could do about it anyway. We did ethics reform in 95 and 2005 last year. It's never enough for the newspapers. It's never enough for the good government groups. And prosecutors have gone after some really good people. And look, this case was overturned. That case was overturned. So this actually really feeds into cynicism. But what I do know is when the public cares about it, elected officials have to care about it. And when the public puts pressure on their officials, they do come around to a lot of these measures. But, you know, I'll give you an example. In last year's budget, there was all types of laws. There was nothing really on ethics reform. And the Senate, which I serve, has, not been too keen on a lot of these things. So, unfortunately, whether it's outside income, whether it's closing campaign finance loopholes, I put in a bill this year that would make it illegal to lie to a DA investigator. And I just want to illustrate this point because I think it's important. You know, if I lie to an FBI agent, it's a crime if someone does that. And I cannot tell you what that means in building a federal case. FBI knocks on your door at 6 in the morning, you're either going to be honest, which will obviously help an investigation, or you won't be honest, and when they go to arrest you, you will definitely then be honest. I cannot tell you the amount of big, important cases that you and I know about as household names began because of this statute. But when a DA's investigator knocks on your door, it is totally legal to lie to that person. And so when we want others to pick up the slack, to put more cops on the beat to do these things, it's hard to do. And when I put in a bill for that, it did not move very far. So I certainly think that there's good ideas out there, but the public needs to get behind them because elected officials in Albany left alone, at least a lot of some of whom are calling the shots, are not in favor of them.
And with State Senator Todd Kaminsky of Long Island, also a former federal anti-corruption prosecutor, and Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Politico New York. Any questions or comments, folks, on the Court of Appeals overturning Sheldon Silver's corruption conviction yesterday? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let me ask you, Jimmy, you wrote an article yesterday, headline, Cuomo is nonplussed by Silver ruling, and yet there is the pending case, too, really, of top Cuomo allies, Joe Prococo and Elaine Colloyer. So what do you mean by he's nonplussed?
Well, when asked for comment about the case, he didn't say something like, this proves that we need to, once again, look at our ethics reforms. He didn't say, this proves what I had said in 2015, which is that we should end side jobs for state legislators. He didn't say, I remain concerned about public corruption and the corrosive effect it has on people. What he said was, well, it's an ongoing legal case, and I'll wait until the end before we talk about it, and we'll see where we end up. So one thing that I think has been interesting, and this goes into the point Senator Kaminsky just made, and something that has really drawn the consternation of government reform advocates, journalists, and some citizens who are paying attention, is that Governor Cuomo really did nothing in the last legislative session to push for any kind of government ethics reform. And as you pointed out, Brian, two of the governor's closest allies, including Prococo, a man who he's likened to a brother, are now a trial for bribery and bid rigging schemes. And the only legislative response to the procurement processes which led to these alleged bid rigging, that is to funnel state money through an arm of the state university, which in turn put the money through a nonprofit organization, which had different transparency and bidding requirements, was to just give more money to those same entities. The only measure regarding SUNY Polytechnic Institute and the Fort Schuyler Management Corporation was when legislators voted, I think almost unanimously, to give them another $208 million with absolutely no mandated safeguards or changes to the process that had led to these indictments. That's something that has, I think, it certainly has frustrated me as a citizen and as a taxpayer in New York. I think it's something that every person on the left and the right of the political spectrum will speak, some publicly, many privately, about how frustrating this is. And, you know, it's until there's leadership from the top, until there is a real commitment from either Governor Cuomo or the leaders of the Senate or the Assembly, or perhaps some outside prosecutor or outside force. And Preet Bharara and our Attorney General Eric Schneiderman have spoken publicly about this and have used their bully pulpit to make this case. I don't see how there's going to be any action, because the reality of this, and I've covered through over 9 years here, many cycles and many indictments and many convictions and many charges and many vacations of convictions, et cetera, is that people get outraged for a day or two, and politicians, some will pound their chest, others will say very little, and then the public anger will dissipate and nothing will happen.
Beth, in Margaretville, the Albany lawmakers may be seen as being in Margaritaville. Beth is in Margaretville, New York. Hi, Beth, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm curious why it hasn't been brought up that the New York Constitution, New York State Constitution, is up for a look at, look and see, so to speak, this election cycle.
Right, and we're going to cover that a lot between now and Election Day. It's kind of a referendum question on the ballot. Should there be a state constitutional convention that opens up the entire state constitution to revision? And, right, Margaret?
Yes.
Beth?
I'm sorry, I know that the League of Women Voters is very much behind this proposal and opening it up again, and part of their reason for being behind it is to put in the Constitution reforms that you're discussing. And I was just curious why that hasn't been brought up yet as a possibility of how to fix things, so to speak.
So we're bringing it up now. And Senator Kaminsky, are you in favor of the Constitutional Convention, and do you think it does present a realistic opportunity for meaningful ethics reform in a way that ordinary legislation doesn't?
So I have to tell you, the results of the last presidential election, I believe, have many progressive groups as well as people that you might normally think be advocates for a convention very scared of one and against one. And I totally understand that. In other words, what they're basically saying is, we now know that big money out there has taken over our processes and has won some real big elections, whether it's in Congress, whether it's in Washington, and have really taken over messages to the point that we're not confident that we can get good things done here. And I share their concern, which is, okay, so we open this process up. It's not only opened up for good things, but it could be opened up for all types of different things as well, whether it's restricting women's rights, whether it's rolling back environmental regulations. Of course, there could be some gains that have been made by various employment sectors that they think will be rolled back. So the mood, as much as there is an opportunity for real reform, there's also a feeling that this could open up a lot of and roll back a lot of gains that have been made. And so the normal forces that you would see and the normal momentum you might see for a constitutional convention has really waned. And as far as I can tell, both down on Long Island and in Albany, doesn't really exist. And I don't think it is a path by which we should feel that a lot of this reform is going to get done. It's going to get done when people start electing officials that they put there for that reason. And when corruption becomes a big enough issue, and look, I don't think I'm in my seat, literally and both literally in terms of why it opened and then how I was able to win a seat that was held by the different party for 30 years. I think when people make it an issue in their elections, the public will respond to it. And I don't, mm-hmm. I think there are a few seats changing away from actually getting real reforms done, but there's still a long way to go.
So you are a no on the Constitutional Convention, yes?
Yeah, I mean, there are still some arguments I'm listening to, but right now I'm very dubious that it is a path that we're going to be able to go down, and so I'm certainly not advocating for one, and I'm certainly leaning very negatively on it right now.
Sarah in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hi, Brian. We are huge supporters and financial supporters of WNYC, and thank you for talking about it.
Thank you.
My question is, did anyone investigate connections between Sheldon Silver and Trump? Because when Trump fired Preet Bharara, my first sentence was, now they're going to release all the corrupt politicians. And it seems that's how this government wants to function. And the second thing is that as a citizen, I'm outraged day after day that the big guys get a slap on the wrist, they pay the fine, while if the little guy steals $20, he goes to prison. And this really has to change. We want even the big guys to go to prison and do their time, be their bankers or politicians. I don't care about them paying fines because we don't see that money, right? And yeah. We want everyone to be punished equally. But what is connection between Trump and Sheldon Silver? I'm really curious. And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you very much. Jimmy?
Brian, can I just answer that very quickly?
Who's that?
This is Todd.
Go ahead, Senator.
So a number of people have asked me, just, not knowing, not being lawyers, asking about a legal system, does this come from Washington? And I, as much as I'm disturbed by the decision, I just want everyone to know that this has nothing to do at all with the current administration. This is just an appellate court of lifetime appointed judges who are doing their best to interpret the Supreme Court's recent decisions. I will say, however, that it is that they are in one way connected, which is that the Supreme Court, which was led by the jurisprudence of Anthony Scalia in this area, have really rolled back expansive views of the mail fraud laws, of now of public honest services laws, and of course we're going to assume under this president that the court is only going to move more in that direction with its new appointees. So what does that mean? It means that federal prosecutors going after state officials, relying on these statutes, do not have the same wide net that they could have previously cast. It's going to make investigations hard. It's going to make cases harder to prove. It's going to limit the evidence that they can go after. So what does that mean? That means that we now either have to have Congress clarify that these statutes were meant to go after more, or the state's going to have to step up and put in sharper teeth in its own laws.
Jimmy, 30 seconds. Anything to add?
I know that Donald Trump had contact with major state officials, particularly in the late 90s when he was pushing to see gambling not legalized in New York. He was at the time a major casino operator in New Jersey. And so I'm sure that he had connections and he had contacts with Sheldon Silver. He may have even donated a few campaign dollars. But Senator Kaminsky's point is correct that Trump had nothing to do with this ruling. And in terms of Trump's decision to fire Preet Bharara, I'm sure that we'll be asking many questions about that and the many factors. Silver's relationships to Trump might be a very small one or maybe nothing at all.
Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Politico New York, and Democratic State Senator Todd Kaminsky of Long Island, thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us, Brian.